All right, welcome everyone. Today, I'm gonna officially open up two things. I'm gonna officially open up the Town of Heath Select Board meeting. Today is January 16th, 2025, and I'll be reopening the poll hearing. This is our continuance, and this is a poll hearing, and it is for National Grid petition for joint or identical poll locations. Number 309, 33364, and number 309, 33367. Both locations sited on Burrington Road. As I said, this is a continuation. Ground rules for people who weren't here last time. This is the continuation of the public hearing. It allows everyone who has shown up to join us. If you wish to speak, you'll be called on. I am going to start with welcoming the folks from National Grid, letting them introduce themselves. If they have statements they'd like to make, they'll get the floor first. I'll turn it over to the select board if they would like to ask some questions before other folks here. And then we'll open it up to everybody else who's come. If you have any questions, comments, I'm asking for everybody to do as well as we did at the last meeting, and remember that we're going to be patient and polite with one another. Everyone has a different reason for being here. Everyone's reason is as important as the next. I thought the last hearing went really well. I appreciate everyone who's shown up and taken part in the conversation with us. I appreciate and am thanking National Grid in advance from the select board for the answers that they've provided in preparation for this meeting. We'll talk about those a little bit tonight, I'm sure. And that's that. So again, everybody good? If anybody needs us to be a little bit louder, let me know. The meeting is being audio recorded, so other folks can listen as they wish down the road. And I think that's it. So for us, Elisa Virango, select board member. We've got Will over here, Will Emmett, myself, Robin Provost. Everybody knows Hilma Sumner, town coordinator. Did you have anything you wanted to
One thing I was going to say, when people speak, if they could please state their name and speak loudly for the recording for the folks who will be listening later, that would be really appreciated.
So that means loud like me.
You be Robin Loud.
Somebody already pointed that out. Robin Loud. National Grid, thanks for coming. Welcome back to Heath. You guys want to introduce who's here, and you want to start off?
Okay. I was joking to them that I'm the rose between the two thorns.
There you go.
My name is Joanne DeRose. I'm actually the director for community customer in central and western Massachusetts. I happen to live in Williamstown, so I'm semi-local. I actually used to do the job that Bob's doing now prior to taking this position, so I'm very familiar with the town and with the area and the region, and we just love it out here. And I wanted to thank everybody for giving us the opportunity to come tonight and to speak again and to answer any concerns that you have. Thank you.
Okay. Pat Shea, I know we've met a lot of you before. I'm the project manager for this project that we're calling the Bear Swamp / 19W1 Horse Perform Feeder Project. Here for any really schedule cost, all those type of design questions and whatnot, I'm your guy.
And I'm not going to say last but not least, because we have a few other National Grid representatives back that will be supporting us with any specific questions. My name is Robert Ide, but you can call me Bob. I'm the community manager for the Town of Heath and several others across the region. And we're just down the road in Greater Springfield. And here to support any way that we can, both at this meeting and after the fact as well. So happy to help each and every one of you.
Do you have other folks that you want to introduce in the back, or I know that they answer questions, so.
Yeah.
Greer Hoffman, designer, working with Matt.
Hey, I manage the project engagement for National Grid in Millbrook. Hey, Davenport, complex project management.
Mike Tager, I'm the local designer. I used to have this here, so I'm very familiar with this.
Jane Charles.
Thank you all for coming. Very appreciated. Very appreciated. Do you folks want to start with anything? Do you have any opening?
Yeah, go ahead.
Give it to Bob.
And if you don't, and you want to just start going, we can.
It depends on, so there's two angles I'm thinking of taking this. I guess just as a quick question for everybody in the audience, is anybody has not been at the previous meetings, has walked in this kind of fresh, looking for an understanding of the project overall? Or has everybody here been to the past meetings, nor are at today, and we're walking into just the next step of this conversation? So it seems like everybody has been here through the entire piece of this. All right, fantastic. I guess just kind of a brief summary of where we were before, where we're at today, and then we could kind of kick it off from there. And Joanne, feel free to jump in anywhere where I miss. So at the last meeting, we were essentially issued a continuance to take back several questions. Those questions we did respond to last week, provided right to the community. There was a few questions that were sent back in return just to ensure that, you know, for clarification. And now we're stepping through the process of opening us for more deliberation for any follow-up questions between the community as well as the select board on the worst performing feeder project for the 1019W1 feeder. That's just a general overview. And how much deeper would you like me to go?
Everybody's familiar.
Yeah, everybody's familiar on this. I don't want to belabor the point.
Yeah.
So, overview of where we're at. So, please.
Great. Thank you for the responses.
Yes.
We have, as you know, we had an opportunity to read through them, and then we fired back a handful of questions. I know that those were responded to today. I'll be honest. I just got them, I'm gonna take a read as people are talking. But I was just gonna ask if either select board member have questions they'd like to start with, or do you want me to open it up? Will?
I think at this point, why don't we open
up? Lisa?
I would agree, because some of the questions that I might have already maybe been answered, so I'd need a second to look at what has come in. So we can open up to whatever you wanna do.
Here we go. Okay, anybody out in the audience that would like to speak? Question? Oh man, if you all look at me and nobody has a question or a comment. Oh good, thanks, Bill.
Anyway.
Yeah, okay. That doesn't give us time to read.
So I'm Bill Fontes, I live on Taylor Brook Road in Heath. I'm just looking at looks like the second set of questions that were sent out. Just had two additions regarding option two and regarding option four.
Okay.
And I don't know that was there time for you guys to answer that second set of questions, because I don't see that in my packet.
That was what we answered this afternoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is just the packets I think they just got.
Oh. Yeah, you know what I think I'm going to do to help with that and to help others here? Some people here have these questions because they're on various boards, other people of interest, and other people don't. So I think if we did just a brief recap of the information you guys provided originally back on Friday, and then kind of what we asked in return, and then the responses back, that gets everyone, including the select board, up to date as quickly as possible, I think. If that makes sense.
Yep.
And that way everyone that's here will have an idea of what's gone back and forth in the last handful of days. And I don't think we need to go line by line on anything, but National Grid did provide a note to us, a letter to us. And so there were three areas that they responded to. One, they provided outage information, which was questioned by a handful of folks. And they provided that from 2019 through 2024. The statement was made that this feeder is in the bottom 5% of National Grid's electrical distribution feeder for reliability in 19, 22, and 23. They talked about the fact that 75% of the outages were related to vegetation. There was 25% were split between other non-vegetation related causes, lightning device failure, vehicle, and unknown. Was made mention that for us to remember and understand that tree trimming is a part of the projects, so that would be something that we would have as part of whatever project moved forward, should one move forward. So that was one section, was outage information. Then they gave us the answers that we were asking about the different options that were looked at by National Grid as part of this request. And there were four options that we asked about. All four responded to. Option one, that's, so as we start talking, people know what we're talking about. So option one was the Burrington Road option as presented at this poll hearing. Option two was the questioned Avery Brook option that got brought up at the last meeting that they looked at and did much more research since last being here and had information for that for us. Option three was the question Route 8A option, which was not fully vetted because it does not, I don't want to speak on behalf of this one, it does not meet the criteria for which this project needs to meet.
The reliability criteria
reliability,
doesn't meet that.
Correct. And then the option four was going back to Burrington, and that was the underground option. So those were the four options. We were given reasons why they were looked at, why they were not looked at, and the potential costs associated with the increased costs associated with option two. So option two was approximately $71,000 more than option one, and option four, which was the underground and Burrington Road, was approximately $355,000 more than option one. And then the third part of the response was about the cost, the area, the cost for the town to relocate the light plant assets onto the new poles. And so that was a conversation that referred us back, which we knew, to our aerial agreement that we have with National Grid. So there was communication about that. The response from various people in Heath, meaning the select board, municipal light board, and light plant manager, we asked for some more information on a handful of the statements that were made. And then we got those answers back today. So we asked for clarity. There were a handful of questions that came back specifically from the light board or and or manager. And those were in direct, that those were directed towards the aerial agreement. And I think we still have to do some more conversation about that today. You know, that's one of the things we can talk about. But some answers came back that we haven't had an opportunity to read right yet. We also asked about the difference in pole numbers between option one and option two, meaning Burrington and Avery Brook. And that answer just came. So it looks like option one, which is Burrington, is 89 poles being replaced in relocations. And option two is 54 pole replacements and relocations. So that we just got that information. Thank you. I asked a question about what were the other, are there other potential benefits or disadvantages to Heath and our neighboring towns and the neighboring towns if this project at all, whatever option happened, if it happened or it didn't happen? So that was a question I was really curious about, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more, the response that came for that. We've talked, and just so people understand what I'm saying, we've talked about reliability and the reason for this being a reliability project. My concern or my question was, is there anything else that affects Heath, the residents in Heath, or our neighbors if we don't do this project, or we do the project? So that's kind of that. And then, Elisa, you had a couple questions, right, that you had sent?
Much of those got answered.
Yeah, they were right
on
there
the
they
first
go. Yep.
I'm so sorry. Okay. Uh-huh. So, my question was about exploring Avery Brook, and in the response, they had listed National Grid had listed a few things that they hadn't quite gotten into because they would cause more schedule delays and so forth. And I was questioning what schedule and who set it, and what is that all about? And I haven't even read the response yet.
So we can talk about that.
So we can talk about
that. Yeah. So that's kind of the questions that were asked and the responses, and that's what we're just trying to get up to speed on. So now go, Bill, on what you're asking. So that gives everybody at least a picture of what we're talking about.
Right. So actually, one of the things that just as you were speaking, option four is the buried option on Burrington. I'm unclear if that means burying all the way up Burrington or burying just a section that doesn't currently have poles.
Just approximately 600 feet of the section that doesn't have poles. So there still would be new poles on the southern end of Burlington Road up until that small section.
Okay. Just the area that there's not poles currently running, that's what you're talking about, correct? Okay. All right, that's fine. And just to kind of reiterate, I mean, on option four, you know, it's been, you guys noted that it was 75% of the power outages were due to vegetation. So, I mean, I think burying is more money up front, as you guys know, but I think on the back end you save money. So, and there's less faults that could come up. I mean, when stuff is exposed to weather and exposed to vegetation, we have more problems with it than when it's buried in the ground. So that's all. That's all I have for now.
Other folks have questions, comments, Wanda, or which one of you guys? Both raise your hands at the same time.
So can you confirm that the reason why you went up Burlington Road instead of Avery Brook Road is a savings of $71,000? Is that the difference between making the...
So, we're good. Okay, so yes, largely because it was the most cost effective option when our option solutions engineering were looking at the options presented.
Right. So $71,000 is what you're saving.
So at the time we initially designed it, we thought that number was much higher. We hadn't done a full deep dive into it.
Oh,
yet.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. And we are also obligated to our ratepayers to present the least cost option, right? Because those are monies we're spending on behalf of our customers.
Correct.
So that is the option that we will always present, the least cost.
How much is the total project?
Oh.
What is the total project in Keith?
I can't speak for just Heath because I just know the total phase one of Heath and Charlemont.
Okay.
Is approximately 15 million.
15 million? Sorry.
So you're worried about 71,000.
One additional comment. Phase one, the two phases of the project, phase two only affects the town of Roe, does not deal with Heath. So when we say phase one, that is Heath and Charlemont. Phase two is the subsequent work that's necessary in Roe. I just want to confirm that there's not a secondary project that's happening in this community.
So
cash.
15 million
for cash.
just to clarify on the total cost of the project. When we do our options and solutions analysis, we are at a plus 200 minus 50% level tolerance. That is where that $15 million number is coming from. What we do is we look at all the options. We always present the least cost, best fit for purpose solution. And then we start investigating that option further and refining that cost as we go. We've now done this with the Burlington Road option one. And because of concerns from town residents, we've also now done the same thing for option two, which is not our standard practice. As we work through the process, that's where we're getting to that smaller number. It was a larger number when we were at a plus 200 minus 50%. That's following standard project progression. So there's not a level set on that, but that's where we're talking about different times in the project.
Thank you. No, that's fair. I understand that. Thank you. Other questions? Yeah?
I had a few
names.
Names. Tom Lesser. I'm an attorney from Northampton. I live in Conway, and I represent the movies in this matter. I had a few things really for the board to think about. And number one, you ask about outages. And you actually also ask about the length of the outages. And you didn't receive an answer to that. The other thing is, in terms of outages, it's under five for years 21, 22, and 23. And I wondered, is that number one? The difference between one and four. If it's one outage each year, that's not an astronomical amount. There was no outages to speak of in 2024. And that sort of leads you to sort of the schedule question, like whose schedule is this on? Well, as the board, I think it should be on Heath's schedule. And it's for you to decide. There's no absolute emergency in terms of this project for Heath. So that's the first thing. I think it should be on your schedule. And number two, if you decide that you needed an improvement, you just want to make sure you pick the right location for these poles and do it right without regard to whether it's going to happen a year or two later. Now, we just heard that Charlemont and Heath are a $15 million project, and just for point of simplicity, and you can help me out, is the Heath part more expensive or the Charlemont part? Do you know?
It's the row part, right? There's one.
Well, that's not, that's the first number.
Yeah,
but
okay.
We can't speak to see which is more expensive. Okay.
But if you divide it in half, it's called $7 million, so you call it $5 million. For the Heath part of the project, $71,000 is an averaging, you know, number. It's nothing in terms of the total cost of the project. And actually, you go up Burrington Road and it's more expensive for the town of Heath because you have more poles and more broadband to move. So you have to decide as a board which is preferable. Now I understand that sort of by policy they have, National Grid has to present the cheapest project, the cheapest way of doing it. But essentially it's minimal between those two. And you have to decide which one makes more sense. Does it make more sense to have those phase three poles and all that reconstruction going in through your historical district? Or does it make more sense to save money on your broadband and having it go up even a brook? The third thing is something that we just heard from Mr. Fontes, that you could tell them it has to be underground, and they said approximately 75% of the outage cases related to vegetation, trees falling, broken limbs, and tree growth. The remaining 25 were split between various non-vegetation related causes, lightning, device failure, vehicle, and unknown. Well, lightning, if it's underground, isn't going to happen. Vehicles aren't going to hit the poles. So obviously you're going to have, to the extent you have outages now, you're going to have less outages. You're going to have virtually no outages. And I presented those articles last time to the board from Vermont where they put the stuff, where they put the pole, the lines underground, and they didn't have outages. And in the long run, it was a savings to them, because every year you have to come and you have to trim the trees. And then when you have outages, you have to pay people on an emergency basis to come up and fix all those outages. So as Mr. Fontes said, yeah, it's a cost up front, but in the long run, it's maybe, it's some, they get much of that cost back. And it's obviously much more beneficial to the citizens of Heath to bury the lines, because that means that you aren't going to have outages. So I think those are all things worth considering in terms of the broad scope of this. Of course, I represent the Moonies, and I think they have a special situation with regard to their view. And I've talked about that, and I'm not going to go into that again at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Wow, this has been quiet. Alisa.
Oh, thank you, Robin. So if I may, I wanted to just ask a little more question, or a little more about the response to question number four, which was comparing the number of poles
on option one versus option two. And again, thank you so much for your responses. They've been really helpful. So I really appreciate the time and effort that went into getting that to us so quickly. So when you say that option one includes approximately 89 pole replacements, which is basically a pole that is going within 3 feet of an existing pole, and then relocations, which is a pole that needs to be replaced, but it's 3 feet away from the current pole, is that correct? What I'm not seeing in these numbers are new poles that are required for option one and option two. Do you happen to know those figures?
I know option one was approximately 15 poles.
New
15 poles, correct.
Okay.
That's not including the mid-span poles. It was 15 in that section of Burlington Road, the southern section.
Okay.
Do you happen to have the amount of new poles on Avery Brook?
No,
I
wasn't necessary, but any existing pole is going to be replaced. So if it's just general number of poles that are going to be replaced, it's going to include the new location mid-span poles and every existing pole will be upgraded.
So why I'm asking is so that we can try to calculate the cost to the town of Heath. Because for a new pole, then wires need to be attached to the new pole. So that's the figure that I don't think that we have. As far as, am I correct?
Only if the plant, the municipal light plant, is going to attach assets to the pole.
Yeah. Okay.
So if there's no, so.
Oh, understood.
On
Avery Brook Road, there's a
stretch where new poles would be going,
right?
New poles would be going, but there's no houses there, right?
So there are two houses, but then there's no houses. So I haven't gotten to that.
And then I was gonna say there's a section where there's two houses,
right?
But you don't know if those two people are gonna take the service or not, but you wouldn't be attaching assets to the poles where there's no house at this point in time. So
yeah.
That's not
the
cost.
I had one follow-up question. Did you say that the underground work would only be where there are no poles now?
Correct.
So there is a pole. I'm just curious about this one pole. There is a pole. Actually, there are several, but there's one that's right smack in the middle of the view going down the hill or coming up the hill. And that pole is a Mount Bell pole. It hasn't been used for, well, I've been here 50 years and it wasn't being used when I moved here. And I'm curious whether or not you're going to use that pole or replace that pole or whether that's in the area that's going to be underground for the 600 feet.
That's not a National Grid owned pole, so we can't speak to it. We have no plans to use it, but it's not a National Grid pole.
There's a couple of
them.
Those poles were to get the telephone to the dump.
Yep.
That's all they did. They never had power.
I know.
Right. So years ago, we did have the line to the dump that we stripped out because we weren't using it. Because that wasn't our pole, we did not have permission to touch it. That's why it's still standing, right? So Verizon, if they're made aware of it, might be willing to remove that.
Okay. There's not one of those agreements between Verizon and National Grid.
That one they're solely
owned. Who owns the pole and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So most poles are jointly owned, meaning that we have rakes and Verizon has rakes, and we call them jointly owned poles, right? But we do have solely owned poles out there that just belong to Grid, and that's just belong to Verizon. So when it's a solely owned pole, it's up to that entity to make sure that they maintain or remove or do whatever they need to do to it, which is why we didn't take it when we stripped out the dump, line.
So the 600 feet doesn't take into consideration those poles because they're not.
I believe so.
They're not
yeah, it's not the same path.
Thank you.
The jointly owned poles that you just to follow up on that statement, when it comes to removing the poles that are jointly owned, how will that happen?
So there's an agreement at the state level between utilities because we want to make sure that we're fair and equitable since we jointly own them. So National Grid sets poles, Verizon pulls.
So that's why poles stay.
Yeah. Well, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're trying to work to get that changed, but
okay, there was a question over here, and then
yeah.
Bill. Yeah, go ahead.
For the project.
Name?
My name is John Burlington. I'm here for John Waterloo.
Yep.
Option one, option two. So now that you know a lot of stuff and how people feel, what are you leaning for? Option one or two?
I can take that response. First off, thank you, Mr. Burlington. So what we're presenting today, the poll petition here, is for option one.
Okay,
so
now my question now is now the estimate to go underground in front of their property is how much money to go underground?
About $350,000.
Okay, my question is, you said manhole covers, that's only because you need vaults?
We would need at least two manholes on either end of where we go underground.
So is that like a cement thing buried?
It's a 7 foot.
Why do you need that? Because I think you inflated the cost of the job, because actually you don't have no terminations in here. Your terminations are on the top of the pole, so you're going from a Hendrix cable to URD rated for the voltage and insulation, so your terminations are on top, and then you go to schedule ABPDC, sweep it, and go up to the next pole. You really don't need your boxes and your manhole covers.
So we do know those. We do need those for one, cable pulling and drainage as well. Drainage and ice control. They have manholes near a riser pole that helps out with the water drainage and ice.
You're on the side of a hill, so if you just backfill it good and you got gravel, it just leach right there. You know, I mean, if the project is done good, the cables are rated for, you know, wet locations and everything. And I understand a lot of that, but I mean, Eversource, they don't do manholes, they don't do, you know, boxes or anything. They sweep it and go up.
So our standard is every approximate 250 feet of underground, especially where this would be 500 copper primary cable, every about 250 feet, and that's if it's a straight line where there's going to be bends in this.
So that's your standard. That's what.
That's standard for the NESC specification.
Okay. So that's your standard.
Yeah. So per those specifications, every 250 feet of that size cable, the 500 copper, if it's not a straight line, especially, we need a manhole. And that's why we get two in that, because it's approximately 600 feet.
Thank you. Bill?
Just one other thing about the Berry option. So coming up Burlington, we're talking about, 36-foot poles is the norm for existing plant. Is that correct?
The existing poles are 36,
is
what you're saying? So the existing poles are 35 foot,
35.
But that doesn't mean that they're 35 foot above grade.
No, I understand.
Yep.
And the new poles would be how high?
45 foot.
So my question is, we're talking about a reliability project. Don't you think most of the trees are going to be taller than either one of those two poles? So if it's reliability you're shooting for, the trees are still going to drop stuff on a 45-foot pole, just like they stopped dropping on a 35-foot pole, so I'm confused.
So that's why tree trimming is a part of the project, tree trimming and removals, and the Hendrix cable we're putting in is much more, I'm trying to think of the right word, it's much more, it reflects trees a lot better. If a tree falls on that Hendrix cable, it's a lot more likely, depending on the size of the tree, it's a lot more likely to just bounce off the cable versus do damage. That's why we're building the pole up. Most likely some wider poles, and that Hendrix really has the strong tension that'll just bounce it off.
So I guess what I'm getting at is if the goal is reliability, put it on the ground. And that's the most reliable.
Exactly.
okay.
I just had a question. I'm a little confused. Avery Brook, you're putting some poles underground, is that correct?
Are you
putting some of the wire underground where there are no poles?
So that was one of the options presented to.
Not on Avery Brook.
On Avery
Brook.
Yeah.
Where there are no poles, you're simply going to put poles.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Other questions? Comments? Lisa.
Just one little one. So it was interesting to see the statistics that National Grid provided about the number of outages and durations and how they've greatly improved during the year of 2023 and 2024. And I believe that was because of the vegetation clearing that had been done. I would be curious to know where this particular feeder line ranks now if you're just looking at the past 2 years. Would National Grid be willing to reevaluate the performance of this feeder just by looking at the past 2 years? Just out of curiosity.
So
we might not be the worst feeder anymore.
So, I mean, it's not the worst feeder. In 2023, it was in that bottom 5%.
Still.
I can't speak to what percent it was in
2024. Mm-hmm.
I can say that even if it was out of that 5% and it's not a worst performing feeder anymore, that's not to say that it won't be back on that list in 2025. Just because, you know, we may have had a good weather this year, that doesn't mean that something could happen this next year. And due to, and if we go through this project, even if we have a severe weather event, which is obviously, you know, we live in New England, it's part of life up here. If we have a severe weather event, this new project would prevent a lot of outages that even if there was a bad event, we could still be very likely above that 5% and a much stronger feeder.
Thank you.
David
Gordon, Avery Brook Road. When you are considering reliability, I understand it's not just about outages, it's also about capacity to serve the area and energy flow and that sort of thing. But just in terms of outages and outages caused by vegetation problems, when you compare two options, do you take into account or try to assess the nature of the vegetation along those two options? What I'm thinking is Avery Brook Road and Burlington South Road, they're different distances, which certainly would play into risk of vegetation, but there's also different characteristics in terms of the vegetation that's there, the width of the roads, and so on. So I'm just curious, when you're thinking reliability, and especially if you're thinking about minimizing outages due to vegetation, do you take those sort of things into account?
Yeah, a part of the option solutions engineering review, there is a review process with our forestry team that they do review options being presented and evaluate those risks. And if one risk in one route or option has more risk than the other, then we take note of that, and that's a part of the decision process.
So it's not just about the cost of putting lines there, you're also somehow trying to factor in the risk of
we're factoring in the risk of you know, tree and forestry, you know, not cost, but, you know, damage, the status of it, risks of environmental permitting as well, that all be a part of different options, you know, versus, you know, types of trees that might need different permitting, wildlife permitting, conservation commission, that's all a part of that decision process.
And that type of information doesn't really make it into the cost of construction. Right, that's an ongoing cost after construction. So is that kind of evaluation available to us, a comparison of the reliability between a line running up Burlington and a line running up Avery Brook?
So an estimate for those added contingencies, for permitting, forestry, all that stuff, that is a part of the estimates.
I'm not talking about construction, I'm talking about operation after construction is complete and the risk of outages after that.
So National Grid is we do a cycle trim, you know, so once the line has been built or expanded or upgraded, you know, we work with our forestry team to come up with hazard mitigation, right? So we take a look at each town and we'll take a look at main feeders in each town, and there's a cycle trim assigned to that, meaning if we did Heath today, we probably would not come back unless there were a specific example of a hazard tree for 5 to 6 years, right? So that's the process. Again, we have an ability, if you know, were to call us and say we've got a tree on Avery Brook that is in danger of coming down, we would look at it. But on a wholesale A to Z, looking at trees, it's once every 5 to 6 years.
So, I guess in other words, you take into account the vegetation as far as the cost of construction,
right?
Once that's done, you would consider two routes to be basically equally at risk,
right?
Because you're going to manage the vegetation to keep that risk level the same on those two levels.
We're gonna make it as minimal as possible when we're doing the work.
Thank you.
John, and then over here.
Hi, I'm John, y'all know me. If you have a 40-foot pole, how far back do you cut the vegetation? Do you go back 45 feet, or at least 30 feet?
10 feet.
So, okay, so then tell me this, explain to this then. A 50-foot tree on somebody's lawn could still come down and hit those power lines.
And so, that's a risk.
So it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's typically...
I mean, it just...
So it's typically not entire trees that come down, although it happens. I'm not going to deny that.
In the past 3 years, with all the rains we've had, the trees uproot significantly in this area.
So again, with the hazard mitigation that where forestry applies to everything they look at, they try to take a look at that, right? We've been clearing wider than we have in the past, which we work with the tree wardens of each town to make sure that they're in agreement with what we're doing. And we will, if we feel a tree is in danger, we'll ask special permission from either the homeowner, or if it's in the public way, we'll work with the town. So they really are analyzing and taking a look at every hazard tree out there. Our arborists, we've beefed up our arborist staff to make sure that we have enough folks that can do this analysis for us, recognizing that we have had significant weather events where tree roots are just not as strong as they used to be. Right? And then, of course, you get the various insects and those types of things. So again, we are doing everything that we can to make sure that trees lessen impact on our system within reason.
Sure.
We don't want to denude a town.
No.
Eventually, on Avery Brook Road, there's
going to
be...
Wait a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're on Avery Brook.
It's Brielle. She doesn't mind. She's used to me.
Yeah, but then we do have some other people who have their hands up too. So Brielle and then Barbara.
Brielle Dixon, Peak resident. I also live on Burlington Road. We've had the house for a year now. We have had just one outage. It's the least I've ever experienced living in New England. And just to speak to this reliability project, when that tree, our one outage, tree fell on the line, started a brush fire, power was out for several hours. I went to check on my neighbor to see how he was doing since the fire was in his yard, and he let me know that he had called National Grid 3 or 4 times to let them know about this tree that was going to fall on the line. So I feel like working on maintaining these right-of-ways would do more for reliability than this $15 million project.
Barbara Gordon, Avery Brook Road. Speaking to the tree issues, I believe you relayed previously how many trees would have to be removed for the Burlington project. Could you recap that, please? And then do you have a number for how many trees would be scheduled for removal if you took the Avery Brook Road route?
So we don't have the numbers. I know it was sent to the town for the numbers for the Burlington Road project. I don't have those numbers in front of me for that scope. I just know it was sent out and I reviewed it months ago. There has not been a formal scope put together from our forestry consultants for Avery Brook. It was just looked at through design and estimated that way, but we have not had a full-on forestry review.
But there was an estimate, apparently. I mean, that would be an important part of your cost analysis.
Yeah.
And the estimate was?
It was a part of the total estimate we received.
Yeah.
For the forest.
Just for rough numbers, we used a percentage. There has not been the in-depth, as Pat said, there's not been the in-depth looking at pole by pole, device by device on Avery Brook at this point.
Thank you.
So it may come up higher than 70, most likely will come up higher. Again, we have not done the full scope on that, like we have on Burlington.
Thank you.
Anybody else who has not had an opportunity to speak that would like to?
I just have one.
Sure. Name?
Short thing to say. My name is Faith Jones. I'm here for my sister Wanda Mooney and my brother-in-law, John, and my son, Rowan, and his fiancée, Brielle, who just purchased last year on Burrington Road. I'm just listening to National Grid, to everybody that spoke, to the select board, and I read the letter that National Grid sent to my sister, Gabrielle, and I just think that the easy solution is to bury all of the poles or not have poles and bury the lines, because it seems like it benefits both National Grid and the townspeople in the long run, regardless of the upfront cost, just like Wanda's lawyer stated and this gentleman behind them. It seems like the best solution that everybody gets the cost-benefit analysis, even though upfront costs would be higher over the long run, and also considering the Vermont project that my sister investigated about, it seems like the bottom line and the easy solution would be to bury all of the lines.
Thank you. Anybody else? Wanda, did you want to speak? Oh, no. Oh, Devin and then Wanda. Sorry, Devin, I didn't see that hand.
Oh, my sister was up.
Yeah. Oh, all right, sorry.
I'm Devin Clare. I'm from Vermont.
Are you watching?
Yeah.
Wait,
just
oh,
wait.
Oh, wait. Oh, do you want to respond?
I did.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Just yell.
Oh, apologies.
Hold on, Devin.
Our typical mode of operation is, unless a question is directly asked to us and allowed for review, we will respond.
Okay.
But please, Joan.
Yeah, so I just wanted to respond to the underground, and I understand on the surface there's the impression that, and there may be some documentation that backs it up, that underground is more reliable. And I think on the surface it is, right? Not, no pun intended, but I think on the surface it is. Having also, I have oversight over the city of Worcester, which is underground. I will tell you, we have more outages there than a lot of places, right? There are sections of North Adams that are underground. At the beginning, it increases reliability because it's new. Once it starts to age, and it's harder to replace, outages are longer in duration to repair because you gotta find it, right? You can't just look up, see if there's a tree on the branch or a branch that's on the wires. You can't see a pole is broken because a car hit it, whatever it may be. It's not obvious. You have to go manhole to manhole to manhole to find it. In a lot of cases, the manhole's filled with water, which means we have to pump them out, right? So outages can take longer, and typically when we have a repair, it's a longer repair that we have to do. It takes longer. There are outages in Worcester that I've been a part of that have taken 2 weeks, right? So we actually bring in a generator for those neighborhoods, and we supply power via generator because it takes us that long to fix what's broken. So again, on the surface, underground seems logical, and I would think the same. It is not necessarily. So I don't want to say it's the end all and be all of reliability. I think what we have here and what we've presented to the town and to all of you is a cost-effective, reasonable way to increase the reliability in the region that we can do, including, so Heath is part of it, right? We need Heath in order to do the entire project. It's not a simple matter of bypassing Heath. In order to improve the reliability for the whole feeder, which is what we're looking at, so the 1019, we have to look at all of the towns that are impacted. So it's not just Heath, it's not just Charlemont. You know, it's Monroe, and there's other communities that are gonna benefit from this than just you two. And that's our goal, right? Nobody likes to not have power.
My sister's.
Wait. I can't go back and forth.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We gotta adjust.
So we understand, right?
Yeah.
I have lost power a couple of times last year myself. I understand it's a hardship for communities. And so while Heath may not have been impacted as much last year, I will tell you they were the year before, right? And I will tell you that Charlemont has been impacted. I will tell you that Roe has been impacted. So this project is gonna be good for the entire region. And that's why we're here. That's why we're spending the money, right? That's why we're asking ratepayers to pick up the cost of this so that we can help this community and the other communities who are on the 1019 feeder. Right? So, Enriel, I just wanted to say to you, let Hilma know if there's an issue and you can't get through to National Grid and something's not being addressed, because Hilma, has the schedule.
It made me so upset to hear that, and I wish I didn't know we were able to respond, so thank you for allowing. That turned my stomach, and we don't ever want that to occur, and I'm a representative for this company here for you and your community. And Helma has my phone number. It's glued to my hip. Regretfully, I love it. I hate it. But in reality, if there's any issue, please let your officials know. Get a hold of me.
Devin.
Okay, now it's mine. Well, I have a couple of questions now that something just got brought up, but one of them is this whole option two. We're only talking about burying 600 feet in front of the Moonies. We're not talking about burying the whole town.
Correct.
So 600 feet, okay, you just mentioned, not going to be a big problem. If you bury 600 feet and she has a teeny tiny outage, it's not going to be a huge thing. And then I should have brought a pen because I forgot one of the things I was going to say. But now you're talking about, to me, this is you're calling it a feeder. That means it's just coming up to Heath, giving us this extra dose of power. And now you just mentioned something about Row. So I understand it comes from, magically, it comes from Row Bear Swamp, and I don't know how it gets here, but it's now you're talking about coming up from Charlemont to Heath, and now you just threw in phase two of Row and how we're going to benefit the whole region. I thought this was a feeder only to Heath, so how is it going to...
Yeah, I'll jump right in on that. So I'm going to talk about initially what the feeder feeds today, what the plan is for the future, and then how that increases reliability of the system overall. So presently, the 9W1 feeder comes out of Bear Swamp, and it feeds Row, Monroe, Heath, Charlemont, and Holly.
It's and it's all like fingers, or
so,
one
no.
big loop?
Kind of. So okay. The way it comes out presently is there's one piece that, it comes out of the substation, there's one branch that comes towards Heath through Row. There's another branch that comes down the mountain and that feeds into Charlemont and Holly, and then passes all the way down going on the trail. And then there's another feeder over there called 7G1. We'll get into that. And then there's another piece that goes up around the mountain over to Monroe. So that's the existing feeder today. There is one feeder, so I should only do one finger there. One feeder that comes out of Bear Swamp today. So what we're looking to do is to have two feeders come out of Bear Swamp. So essentially there'll be the 9W1 and the 9W2. The 9W1 will feed itself, I might have these reversed, so just go with me here, is one's going to pass that same route that goes through Row into Heath, and under the current example, it would come down Burrington Road to a stop point. And then on the other branch, which would come again out of Bear Swamp, and that would come down into Charlemont, and then come up, it would come up Mountain Road, and then come up to Burrington Road, and then stop. What that'll allow us to do is if there's any type of outage that occurs along the entire system, we'll be able to use what's known as FLISR, and God, I hate this acronym,
Fault Location Isolation Service Restoration.
That's it. Keywords isolation. Keywords isolation. So what it'll allow us to do, having these two feeders come out of the system, is whenever there's an outage, we could pinpoint that location, we could isolate it, and backfeed both ways around that, which would increase reliability to the area at large. So if there is an issue, let's say a tree does come down, or if there's a motor vehicle incident, let's say a squirrel, that does happen. Any type of issue that does occur in the system, it would isolate that portion and then backfeed it. So those two feeders coming out, right now, if you have an issue just right outside the Bear Swamp substation, you could potentially have every community out. What we're looking to do is to ensure that we could backfeed the entire area. That's how it's gonna benefit the area at large. So this piece of the project builds up Heath and Row for reliability, or builds it up into building that reliable feature. And then the key piece on the back end is Row, which comes directly out of the substation, which introduces that second feeder overall. So that's how the project works as a
a hole, if you will. And I wish I had a whiteboard, I could draw it better. I'm a lot better with maps and diagrams, I apologize. That was a lot of words.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Because I could probably synthesize it more.
And I think it's important to note that this splizzer is automated.
Yes.
Right? It doesn't require linemen to come out and open up a fuse or close in a fuse to happen. It's like that, right? So again, as Bob illustration, if it happens, you know, the splizzer system, yeah, like that. The splizzer system can identify what's going on. Our control room can see it.
Yep.
And they can, it'll either manual operate or they can operate it, and they can isolate the section that is seeing the problem, and everybody else gets their power back.
And then once that isolation happens, it immediately, we have a truck that gets dispatched essentially. So that reduces that time. And then the key piece is your local barn is right over the mountain in North Adams. Mm-hmm. So it's to isolate, ensure that, you know, not everybody's impacted a long time if a truck's a little bit farther away, right? So that's the key benefits of the project overall.
So this isn't just for Heath, this is honestly for the greater good.
It's for all
of you. This is the first time I've heard this. I thought the last time we came to the meeting, I thought it was like, oh, Charlemont to Heath, it's just for Heath. This is the first time I'm hearing that it could benefit Roe.
It's so not just Row. Again, it would benefit every community that's served out of the Parasol substation. And just to hit those again, because I love all my communities up here. We got you, we have Charlemont, we have Heath, Holly, then we have Row and Monroe.
Okay, so I wish that you guys had said that way back, because I keep thinking.
Okay.
Well, I missed that part.
I might not have been clear. Like, again,
these
projects get complicated.
That's why we keep talking.
These outages you sent are peanuts, and to spend $15 million on this project to me is ridiculous, and I don't think we need it. Now you're saying, okay, in the future, I still think it's ridiculous and we don't need it, but, you know. To be a good neighbor, do you want to spend $15 million on phase one and then more on phase two?
So key thing is that $15 million isn't just taken on by your community.
No,
that's towards all the ratepayers.
Yeah.
And the one thing, like, for someone, especially you have folks in the region that have like backup generators, that have ways to. We are very conscious about equity, and there's people who experience those outages, and we care that one person's having an outage, I care about that person. If we could ensure that the system overall is being benefited for the common good of all of our ratepayers, I want to ensure it happens. One thing for me, I live out in Western Mass, I care about Western Mass, I want to ensure Western Mass has the same opportunities for reliability as anything in Eastern Massachusetts. This project is going to directly benefit every community in the greater area, and that's why the project was pushed forward to bring us out of that bottom 5%, which we have been for the past five years, and to ensure that we're not going to be in that position moving forward. So it is an investment, but it's an investment to our future as a community, but it's also an investment for every one of our ratepayers in the area to have energy as they need it, especially because, let's be honest here, everything's moving towards electrification. We want to ensure that our life is not disrupted as time goes forward. So that's why. Yeah.
Are there other benefits other than reliability of the addition of the three phase? Or disadvantages of not having it?
Yeah.
It's a storm hardening is one of the main proponents for using the space.
Yeah.
Yes.
You got the cross arm with open wire, a tree falls and they can snap the conductors. In spacer, you have that heavy messenger going through the whole system, which can handle a lot more loads on it. So a tree may land on it and it will uphold the tree instead of breaking multiple poles.
And that's in reference to the configuration of the three phase.
Yeah.
But the addition of three phase in a location, is there an advantage regardless of configuration?
So I think not just just with this project, but with all of the projects National Grid is undertaking, you know, we have been required by the state to undertake a study called the Electric Sector Modernization Plan.
Yes.
So we love our acronyms at National Grid. So it's ESMP, right? So the ESMP, we had to submit a plan to the Department of Public Utilities, and they had to approve it to say, okay, we understand that the needs of our customers are different today than they were 50 years ago. We understand the state, you know, the governor has electrification goals, more electric vehicles, more heat pumps, all those. How can you meet that need, right? So every utility in Massachusetts had to undertake that study. We submitted it to the state back in August last year, and it was approved. Which means that we are now also building out for future anticipated load as opposed to just what's here today, right? We were always a historical company, meaning you tell us what you need and we'll build it. We're now gonna be, we're gonna build it and you come to us, right? So if a company wanted to come and integrate itself in heat, if more homes wanted to be built, if more solar wanted to be put on your homes, right now we don't, we may not have the capacity for it. In the future, we would, right? So that's the, you know, it's a twofold benefit to not only increasing the reliability, but we're increasing capacity, right? And we're making sure that the system is available in the future. We're also, as a result of this ESMP, we are also adding jobs, right? And we try to hire local. The North Adams Barn is all local boys, right? And me, we have hired, I don't know, 4 or 5 linemen just in the last year. So they're well-paying jobs, you know, they're good jobs, they're stable jobs. So we are adding to the economy. We're bringing in different vendors. We have civil, you know, civil contractors that we bring in to do the digging and all that type of work. So we are lending, you know, a boost to the economy whenever we do one of these projects, which we all know in these times, you know, it's tough. It's tough out there. So beyond just, you know, looking forward, you know, again, we're adding some monies to the economy.
Thank you. Wanda had her hand up, and David, circle to the back row, you kind of go that way.
Nice to see you here, to meet you. I'm the one on Burlington Road. So it's so nice to hear how much you care so much about the rural hillside and the community and everything. And with that $15 million the project's going to be, it's $300,000 to bury it in front of my home. They're going to destroy my view if those lines go in.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, the customers are not going to feel the $300,000, and you know it.
Yeah.
But you've never been to my home. And
I've seen the pictures.
I'm sure.
Yeah, which it's beautiful.
It's
right?
Even more so.
I enjoy a view myself.
Yeah.
So I completely understand
right.
where you're coming from.
I don't think
right.
so, unless you're going through it.
Yeah.
I think anybody does, unless you're going through something
right.
like this.
Yeah.
And now I find out it's only $71,000 more to go off Avery Brook Road, which is, you know, I had mentioned that when I met with them back in May, maybe to explore that another option.
Right.
Because I knew underground would probably be a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I don't understand. Why would you destroy somebody's home where they put 40 years of their life into it? There wasn't even a view there when we started. We had nothing. We had nothing.
Yeah.
I'm a Burlington. It's my road. We had nothing when we started that.
We created
40 years. And why for $300,000 when that's how much my property value is going to go down? Why would you even do that to somebody? And you rave about how much you love the community and the people and everything.
So we're not.
I mean, why hurt somebody? I can't wrap my head around it. We have a historic district. Burlington and South Road is one of the prettiest drives.
Mm-hmm.
Why there wasn't no impact study out here first before you got started? The amount of money that you spent to do the your site plans and the foresters coming out to mark everything on Burlington Road. So I said right from the beginning, stop.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just work together on this and come up with a plan that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that you went back to the engineers and the people 3 times. And now I find out it's $71,000 and I'm going to lose $300,000 in properties and it's going to ruin my life. I don't even know if I'd be able to live there after those wires go in. So you have to understand something. It's not right.
Yes.
Is it personal? You better believe it is.
Yeah. So we
but
do hear you, Wanda.
I don't think you do.
We do, because that's why we are now looking into option 2, right? We have gone.
So why, you know.
We've gone down the road again.
I just want to remember, bring the back and forth.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. I just had to.
I understand that.
I'm hearing some things, and I just had to get this, because it's all about how wonderful they are, community and hiring local and all this.
Right.
I am a customer.
Right. So, again, as we said earlier, we are obligated to present the least cost option to the town. Mm-hmm. The town is not obligated to accept that.
I understand.
Right, which is why we are looking closer into option two, right, which is the Burrington Road. The Avery Brook option. So there's nothing here today that has been decided at this point. So we do hear you. I want to assure you of that. We do.
I have a question about the underground quote that was, or budget that was provided. So it's 600 feet, and that number of 350,000, is that the number to put it in the road? Is that going in the road? Where is that trench going? And what is the repair that's happening after in that proposed number?
That is in the road with full curb to curb restoration.
Correct.
Due to the
for that 600 feet.
Correct.
And how? Are there culverts that are being affected? And if there are, is that included in that?
I don't know that much detail on what else being affected. I just know it was a standard with two manholes,
okay,
2.5 and duct bank concrete cased.
Okay.
Kirk.
We
okay.
haven't done final design on that. So
okay. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that's fine. Thank you, David.
Regarding the underground, there's been some confusion, I think, as to where we're actually the underground, suggestions maybe all of it should be underground and so on. If the 600 feet is where there are currently no poles, from the standpoint of the broadband, I'm on the MLB, from the standpoint of the broadband, that will not represent an additional cost.
Correct.
Going underground. However, consider that if they went all the way up Burlington Road underground, that's going to be a huge cost to put the fiber underground as well. And I have no idea what that cost is. We have an estimate for moving fiber from pole to pole, but we have no estimate as to what it would cost to restring the fiber underground. I just want everybody to be aware of that that's a potential.
Yes, thank you for putting that out there. Yes, we've talked about that. Thanks, David.
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry, I forget your name.
Faith. The sister.
I don't remember it.
Forgive me, I forget what your name is.
Joanne.
Thank you for clarifying what you did when my question was presented. What I don't understand following my sister's sharing with you is, again, I hear with sincerity, by the way, from everybody on National Grid, that it's all about customer service, especially from Bob, seems very sincere, that it's all about considering the residents as well as their own cost for the company, which makes perfect sense. I am still confused, just like at last meeting, but I guess I never directly said it to Bob and wanted an answer from Joanne or Bob, and that is, how come Eversource did it for my neighbor in Ashfield with not even a question, burying the lines in front of their home that had a beautiful view? And that wasn't a big deal for them because they were all about supporting their customers.
So,
and it's a very short amount of, so if you have to put it in and you're going to do the Burlington Road route, would you please consider at least leveling up to the same level as Eversource?
So I understand the comparison. I just want to point out that we are two separate utilities, right? We are not affiliated. We are not in any respect the same utility. We present our terms and conditions to the Department of Public Utilities for approval, as does Eversource. And what we have to go by is what has been approved, right? We don't, our current standards for construction are approved as they are. So we can't deviate from that without making sure that we've exhausted all of the options that are currently available to us. So that to us would be an exception. We'd have to make an, we'd have to make a judgment or a reasoning as to why we made that exception. And the DPU can either accept it or they can deny it. So that's one of the fine lines that we walk, right? So every time we go for a rate case, we have to justify what we spent, right? And they take a look at hundreds and thousands of pages of work that we've done. And if they determine that we did something that wasn't correctly or adequately justified, they throw it out, which means we don't get to collect that back, right? That's how we work as a utility. We spend the money that we collect it back through the rates. So if they throw out, you know, a number of construction projects that we have done as being, you know, not justified, then we don't get to collect that money. We're a historical company. We look at, you know, what's happened in the past versus what's going forward. And so we just have to make sure that we're being prudent for all of our ratepayers, right? We want to make sure that all of our, everything that we do every single day is to maximize what our ratepayers get for what we spend, right? That's what we want to do. So if Eversource made that exception, it may be in their terms and conditions that they can do that, or they may have fully justified it. Again, we are examining, you know, the options here. So we presented the least cost option, right? We are hearing what your sister has to say,
yes,
about her property.
Thank you.
This has gone to leadership, right? I've had many, many calls about this project.
Yeah.
As I assured her, we hear you, right? Which is why we're looking at the other option that,
yeah,
we have, which is down Burlington.
I said it again.
It's in my brain.
And one thing I do want to briefly add on to that, if I may,
yeah,
is in Faith, it's you said the word taken in consideration. I just, you know, just want to be as clear can be. So what we're here presenting presently, and that will be decided on, is the poles going in front of Wanda's house. That's where we're at today.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be decided on because, as Joanne mentioned before, we have to provide the least cost option for our ratepayers across all of Massachusetts, across our service territory. So when you say taking consideration, right now we are just discussing this specific piece of the puzzle, which is this route as is, that has to be decided on. So I understand where you're coming from. I just want to be very clear with what they're going to make a decision on, hopefully tonight, and then we go from there. So, just, yeah.
David. Oh, sorry. Bill. Sorry, I'm looking right at you, and I don't know. Oh, wait a minute. Well, there's one response,
sorry,
back. Sorry.
I want to clarify something with a little bit of misunderstanding on Eversource underground lane in Ashfield. That was done because that specific road is actually a scenic highway.
Oh.
And so that's why
they would have done it the whole way.
No, wait, Wanda, please.
We spoke with Eversource. We actually looked this up, contacted our counterparts at Eversource to find out how that was done, to see how what the options were. And they explained to us the reason they had to go underground there was because that was a scenic highway and there were, the words escaping me, but by town regulations, they had to go from the ground to that portion of the plan to change the scenic project.
Thank you.
So just to clarify that was when we reached out to the source, that was the information that they provided to us about that specific project.
Thanks. Bill.
So I was just looking at a response. I guess you're Joanne. Right?
Yeah.
So this is an email that you sent, and it has a document attached with pole measuring work and all that,
yep,
stuff.
Yep, the banner, or the attachment agreement.
Yeah, so
yep,
that's your document? That's a
national
grid
document.
Okay, so I guess what I'm wondering is, with the pole attachment agreement, it was my understanding, and I don't have it in front of me, so forgive me if I'm not speaking, that it was typed up so that we were responsible for the pole attachments until the infrastructure was complete, and the infrastructure upgrade was complete. I believe that was referring to the broadband infrastructure. So I just don't want that to be taken out of context. And now that you're doing an infrastructure upgrade, I mean, if you did an infrastructure upgrade all over Heath, we'd be out of business as a town because we couldn't afford all this water. I mean, it's just an unreasonable expectation.
So I was part of that agreement and part of the conversation. It was made clear to the town that that could be a potential hindrance going forward, right? That we do work on our poles and we do upgrade them and that the town would be responsible. You know, in the agreement, there's a couple of sections, right? So at the beginning, what we do is we do an audit and we look at every pole and then we say whether the pole can currently accommodate the broadband wire or if we need to do an upgrade to accommodate it, right? So it's called Bank Ready, right? So we did an audit of the town, we presented the town with a cost, and we said, this is what needs to change in order to accommodate the broadband. This is the cost. You know, if you pay us the money, which I think you probably got a grant from, right? You pay us those monies, we'll do the upgrades, and then you have permission to attach within a certain space on the pole. In the agreement, actually in section 8.5, it does say, should the licensor, which is us, make any kind of infrastructure changes, it is the licensee's responsibility to make those reattachments, right? So that's the way our agreement is written up. I understand Eversources is not the same, but again, we're different companies, we're different distribution companies. But that is in the agreement that was signed by the town. So I don't know that it was fully understood at the time, but it is part of the agreement.
So again, I would just say again, if you guys decided you needed to upgrade the entire infrastructure of Heath, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be Heath anyway.
We run into this with a number of communities, not necessarily with broadband, but with streetlights. There are a number of communities who have purchased their streetlights under the current policies that are in place. And you know, every time we tell them we need to change a pole, they've got to take their streetlight down and put it back up.
Yep.
We face the same, and it was made clear to them, these are the cost you need to consider, right? Should we do this? I think we're trying to work with the town to come to an agreement on what that broadband transfer is going to look like. But I don't have anything to share right now, but I know we are working, trying to work towards an agreement.
Great.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
So a follow-up to that, that was one of the questions that actually came from, well, that series of questions came from our light plant manager, Kim Kishima. And it makes reference, you make reference to the section that states that National Grid, if the town is not able to make that transfer within a 15-day period of time, that National Grid has the ability, the right to come in and to do that,
mm-hmm.
and then invoice the town, and then we're responsible for that cost?
So that's
or is that a continued conversation?
I think that's a continuing conversation.
Okay. Select Board. Will, you've been quiet, Will.
It's a lot.
I think the only question I had, and I think you've already answered, is that is how three phase would benefit us.
Lisa.
Yes. I've heard twice when we're talking about option one, Burrington Road and the going underground, and also with Avery Brook, that some in-depth studies have not been done to answer some of our questions tonight. Is National Grid prepared to do those in-depth studies so that we can get those answers at this time?
So if we, depending on what answer we get tonight regarding option one, which is in front of the board,
mm-hmm.
we will then proceed with our next available option.
Other questions? Art, Devin.
Sorry.
Hopefully some new ones.
I'm Art.
Head out. Let's get it some more info. Or questions?
This is an aesthetics, and I know aesthetics aren't very high in the priority scale importance for National Grid probably, but I hate looking at wires.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like looking at them. But what's worse is to look at the wires with those diamond-shaped spacers up there. Those spacers are, it's like making the three wires one. When you look at them, they really are obnoxious.
You think so?
And I'm wondering if there's any way that you can string three-phase without them, the way three-phase has been through these already.
Yeah. So, you know, right now, for those who aren't aware, three-phase at the top of a pole, we have a cross arm, right? The piece of wood that goes across the top of the pole, and then we put three wires across, say one, two, three phases, right? There's usually a messenger or something. You know, what you're referring to is the spacer cable. We call it Hendrix. It's the brand that we use. It goes up in a diamond configuration at the top of the pole, and you see those little, S-shaped pieces of that kind of hold the wires apart. But it's essentially in a diamond shape. And the intent of that is to lessen the surface area, right, that a tree could fall in an impact. But the diamond configuration also allows things to slide off or bounce off more easily than something that's just three wires across, right? So, you know, we consider that an increase in reliability, and we like to put that in where possible because it helps. We've done it in numerous locations, and it helps with the reliability. Aesthetically, I'm not sure if there's anything that we could do other than use the cross arm, which defeats kind of the purpose of what we're trying to do.
I used the wrong terminology.
Okay.
I don't know what they're called, but there's a thing that holds the three wires.
That's what she's got.
Yeah.
And it's every 20 to 30 feet on the wire the
that's
whole
it.
Distance.
Yeah.
Is that what
I know
you're
EverSource
about?
Just did it. Where did they do it around?
Doesn't have to
it
do
is
it.
Savoy Mountain.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, it's on 116. They just did 116.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to see it, they redid all of 116.
It's huge work.
But yeah. You know, I would defer to Pat, but again, my instinct is that it does not help with the reliability. It's not going to accomplish what we're hoping to do.
What would not?
The old
to go back to the cross arm, right?
I'm not talking about cross arms. I'm talking about between the poles. The wires between the poles.
Right, so the spacer cable needs those S-shaped devices to
like
hold the wire.
200 feet, there's probably 10 of them or 12 of them between.
Yeah, it's got to hold the wire in that diamond shape.
Right.
Right. There's no other way to do it.
It's not instead of a cross beam or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it's instead of a cross beam at the top.
At the top.
Of the pole,
pole.
Right. So the cross arm to cross arm, you can just run it straight.
Whiteboard.
With the diamond shape, you've got to keep the diamond shape integrity.
Okay.
Between pole to pole, yeah.
So there's no way to do it without that.
No, unfortunately.
I mean, I just assume you see a cross arm rather than ugly thing. They really, it makes the three wires look anything but invisible. All right.
Anybody else? Devin.
So this is the phase one project is Carlmont to Heath, and then phase two will continue into row or row will be whatever.
Yep.
Charlemont hasn't given you a yes or no, right?
Correct.
Okay.
No yes.
And what about row? Have you met with them? Have they approved this?
We have no active design in row right now that we're working with them. We're reaching out to them in the next month or so.
Yeah, we have a meeting in
but
next month.
All of our work, mostly in row, is at our substation within our substation yard.
Okay, but still, those towns haven't approved. And we're like a middle piece, sort of. Yeah, okay.
Other?
I just have one thing, and it's not a question, it's a statement. And you've talked a lot about caring for the community, and that's really wonderful. And you've talked a lot about your duty to your customers. And because you bring up duty to your customers, I have to say that the National Grid is a publicly traded company.
Yes.
And that means it has a fiduciary duty.
Yes.
And that's its ultimate duty. And its ultimate fiduciary duty is to maximize the profits to the shareholders. And it does a very good job of that. The profit last year was $4 billion. So I understand why you present the least costly option, because that's what you're supposed to do. It's appropriate. And you would be violating your fiduciary duty if you didn't do that. But in the whole scheme of the cost of what you're going through, I'd suggest that if you had to spend an extra $500,000, that would be nothing. And that should be done. And of course, as you said, it's ultimately up to the select board. They can deviate from your standards. They can decide which option is the best option. And I'm suggesting that you're not gonna have any financial difficulty if they select an option that's gonna cost you an extra $500,000.
So just from our perspective, keep in mind, Heath is one of 270 communities that we serve within Massachusetts, right? If we set a precedent within the town of Heath, it sets a precedent, right? And that would be ultimately, for the ratepayers, a disaster. Underground is horrifically expensive. You're 600 feet, $300,000, right? So multiply that across our 270 communities, and your rates will be astronomical.
I'm just suggesting
Understood.
I don't represent the Moody's.
Yep.
We're talking about in front of the Moody's house, and we're not even asking you to set the precedent. What I'm asking the board is to tell you that you should do it, and that it doesn't set a precedent for you and your 271 communities, but it preserves their situation.
So the board can't necessarily tell us to put something underground. What they can do is deny what we have in front of them.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's.
And then we can come up with a different, we can present a different option, which may not be the
exact
option.
Exactly. And they can accept or deny that option.
Correct.
Further questions? All right. Select board.
I think I'm good.
Will.
I'm good.
All right. So going to entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Further discussion? Questions? All in favor?
Elisa, aye.
Will, aye.
Robin, aye. All right, folks. So select board's going to take some time to chat, and y'all can listen in. Just remember, we're good people. Okay. So I love being the chair in this situation because I can say, okay, you guys, what do you want to know? All right, so instructions. So we have a lot of information. We're here for, we have two petitions that we've reviewed them. This is specifically for the Burrington, holes in the ground. It's option one is listed. You've asked questions, you've gotten answers, you've heard from people. What we're tasked with is we've got a handful of options. We can, the hearing is closed, it's not gonna be reopened for this project.
Mm-hmm.
If you're comfortable continuing conversation, we can do that, and then we can take a vote. If you're not ready, if you're not comfortable, we can put off our deliberations to another meeting. The public hearing will not be reopened, so there will not be an opportunity for further information or comment from the public. That's where we're at. Will, do you have thoughts one way or another? Are you comfortable moving forward with conversations now? Are you needing time to digest what you've heard? What's your thoughts?
I'm ready to move ahead.
Elisa?
I'm ready to converse.
All right. Feel free. Which one of you want to start with your thoughts?
Will, what do you got?
What?
I can go first if you want.
No, you're good.
So what I'm hearing...
We don't get paid enough for this.
What I'm hearing is that we have this decision about new poles going in on Burrington. I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I know you want to talk to them, but you need to be cognizant that...
Was I speaking loud enough?
No.
Oh, really? I thought I was shouting. I'm so sorry. Okay.
But the volume's going that way.
Okay.
Don't worry about me. I can do this. You don't have to look.
I gotta have eye contact when I talk. Okay, so the way that I'm understanding it, in front of us is the decision to approve or deny the installation of new poles on Burrington Road.
Yes.
Without making that decision, it sounds like more in-depth work for the alternative of Averybrook Road will not go ahead.
Correct.
Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, if you say yes, they're moving forward.
Right, with putting the poles in, but if we say no, then they will look further into what Averybrook really looks like.
Should they want to continue with
that would be their next step.
Correct.
So here's my position is that I still don't know enough about Averybrook to know if that's a good option for the town of Heath. I think financially it's looking that way, which is significantly important.
Correct.
But you would have to then do a lot of tree trimming. There's the wetland. There's a whole other scenario what's going on. What does that do to our town down Averybrook? I don't know that yet because the in-depth study for that area hasn't been done because they want to do Burrington Road with the poles. And until we tell them no, they won't go any further.
So the tree trimming that's required, should they take that direction, the tree trimming that would be required for their project to move forward would be on their shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
They would take on that.
Right.
They would be responsible to go for any licensing that would be required for that project they'd be responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as what we would be responsible for right now, unless we have continued conversation,
mm-hmm.
it's transferring of our assets.
Right.
For our agreement, our licensing agreement.
Right.
And that you have a copy of.
Yes,
everybody has that copy.
And based on the numbers, it is more financially responsible for this route to come of Avery than it is Burrington.
Based on the numbers
yes. that we have been presented.
Yes, less attachment.
And significantly less.
Yes.
That says something.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And then as far as the Averybrook situation, that now, let's say we went to that option, then there's a whole new thing. We're going to find out what gets cleared, what doesn't. There'll be a whole new group of conversations.
That's right.
That. So it's not as if we would just be approved.
No, that's right. They would have to come back with another poll hearing,
right.
And we go through this again,
exactly.
But specifically on Avery.
Exactly.
Correct.
So,
are you in favor of the project?
I'm overall in favor of the project. I'm in favor of three-phase power, and I'm in favor of the economic growth it can bring and reliability. So overall, I am.
Elisa, are you in favor of the project?
I am in favor of the project because of what it brings to our community and our surrounding communities and how we can grow into this particular system that they are providing.
Okay.
Are you in favor of this project?
I am in favor of the project.
Okay. Gotta make sure we get this in there.
I am in favor of the project for a number of reasons that I think my questions have kind of directed that. I think we have to think about the future,
mm-hmm.
and we have to think about the push for the energy source that folks want.
Mm-hmm.
We have to think about growth in Heath.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to, I agree about the potential costs. We have to keep in mind what the costs are for this project financially, even though I do believe that the project needs to move forward. So I'm in agreement
okay.
with what you're saying.
Okay.
So, concerns, thoughts, anything else that you, at any point in time, if you're feeling comfortable, we can make a motion.
I'm comfortable
with making a decision.
Yes.
Robin, are you comfortable going forward and making a decision?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah. So my feeling is, and if we're all in favor, then
mm-hmm.
we can make the motion. So my feeling is, yes, I'm in favor of the project. I do think that there is a better option for it moving forward through Heath than the one that's proposed, that one that we're looking at. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see National Grid continue on another path to accomplish the project.
Agreed.
All right, so can I have a motion,
please?
To, how am I saying this? Both of them separate or together?
Why don't you do each of them separately?
All right, where's my numbers here? Oh, right here. Okay, so can I have a motion to not accept?
Not approve.
Not approve. Not approve. The petition for joint or identical pole locations sent to the Board of Selectmen from the town at the town of Heath, and this is made by Massachusetts Electric Company doing business as National Grid and Verizon New England Incorporated. This is project number 309-33364. Can I have that motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Further conversation and discussion, Will. Alisa.
No, thank you.
All in favor?
Alisa, aye.
Will, aye.
Rob, aye.
Oh.
Can I have a motion to not approve the petition for joint or identical pole locations? This is made out to the town, the Board of Selectmen in the town of Heath, and it is sought by Massachusetts Electric Company doing business as National Grid and Verizon New England Incorporated. And this is project number 309-33367. Can I have that motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Further conversation or discussion? Will? Alisa?
No.
All in favor?
Alisa, aye.
Will, aye.
Robin, aye. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
It's been a process that will continue.
It's so emotional about this decision. This is not easy, folks.
Okay, select board. So we just had a couple little things,
okay.
And then we're closing the meeting. So as people are exiting, can you please to keep the noise down so that I can just finish our quick little meeting we have? Did you have, you had something you wanted me to look at for next week?
Well, I did draft agendas for next week, and I just thought since you're meeting tonight, if you want to just look through and see if you want anything added, subtracted, whatever.
Well, I'm hoping that we'll have the.
Oh, this is the one that they canceled on.
Right.
Okay.
But I'm hoping we're going to have the checklist to look at from them, their bullet point list.
Oh!
So I need
okay.
that on.
Okay. Yep.
And then if we'll take it off, if not.
Sure.
And can you send an invitation to Dave for the
yes.
budget planning section?
Yep, I will send him.
And I think that was good
enough. I think it's plenty.
Okay, thank you. So can I have a motion to adjourn, please?
So moved.
I'll second it.
At 7:43.
At 7:43, yes.
All right, all in favor?
Alisa, aye.
Will, aye.
Robin, aye.